anything to do with the earthquake in Japan, but those are people who do not understand the idea of connectedness, mm-hmm. and that all things are connected and related. And in the great floods that are happening now in the Midwest, you have the birds, the insects, the animals, even the bodies in the cemeteries are going to be affected by this tremendous inundation of water and the merging of these three, four rivers. So everything is affected. Our economy, the food chain, the birds that migrate, the ants, the insects, the mosquitoes, the four-legged, the winged, all of it, the whole world is affected. The universe is affected because of the diversity of energy which is being released in misery and grief and sorrow from the people's minds and thoughts and deeds. Each word, each thought, each deed generates its own energy and goes out into the universe accordingly. So for people to say that I didn't feel anything or I'm totally unaffected by it, it's just not a statement of their ignorance. It's just belated consciousness that's now raining down on us. And we're becoming more and more aware that time of the clock is going to have to be changed. We're going to be maybe moving to 20 hours in a day rather than 24 because things are accelerating at such a speed. We're going to have to make some adjustment, or we're probably going to go a little bit nuts trying to keep up with the clock.
Yeah, well, I'm almost beginning to think that that's happening now because I'm having more and more trouble myself keeping up with the clock.
All of us are. All of us are, brother.
Hmm. Your book, From the Gathering, The Wisdom of Little Crow, lovely little book. The on the cover is depicted what is called a hoop.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a circular object with feathers being depicted, four feathers, and there are actually four major aspects to the hoop.
Yes.
Wisdom, fortitude, bravery, and generosity.
Yes.
Now, I'm familiar more with... Now, I gather that this is a Plains Indian or a Dakota Lakota concept, the hoop. And I'm familiar, of course, with the medicine wheel of the Southwestern Indians more. Are there similarities between the hoop and the medicine wheel?
Everything is the same thing, Sam, in just a different form. So that's my very simplistic answer to it, and saying everything is the same in just a different form. And thereby, it takes a lot of, saves a lot of time and a lot of energy trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
It's all the same thing. It's just a different form. The Creator is the same thing. It's just a different form to many people, and it's addressed differently and looked at differently, but it's the same thing.
Hmm. Now, each of these four aspects, what I would like to do, the book is sort of divided into these four aspects, and and I have a rather dog-eared version of your book here now. I've dog-eared almost every page in here, it seems, because
good.
Every one of them I've I've gone through here, and at least half of them, I think, have struck me as being one that I would like to maybe mention on the show here, but obviously we'll never get to them all. But let's speak first of wisdom.
Yes.
And there are a couple of interesting ones here. First of all, the oral tradition, the idea of connectedness. And I'll read a couple of these that strike me, and then you can just comment on them, and maybe we can kind of go through these that way.
Sure, that'd be fine.
On page 5, somebody tried to tell me that my sacred hoop was just like a cross. I told them that the cross was just like my sacred hoop. You just extended one of the directions, that's all, and then you put it out of balance. At least my hoop is in balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I refer to that as kind of a parable relating to the times when the black robes came among my people. And there was a discussion, and it's in our oral traditions, a discussion was going on between the priest and the leaders, our wise people at that time. And when it first occurred, the priest came and they said to our people, you know, your great spirit, your Wakantanka, your Tokanshva, grandfather, your Umdoji, is just like our God.
Hmm.
And the chief responded, the leader responded, no. He listened and he said, no, it's that your God is just like our Umdoji. 10 years later, it was reversed. Within 20 years, we had forgotten, and we were accepting that parallel and that comparison. And so from that point on, we've seen that the process of changing and trying to put into English what our things meant became part of that destructive nature. So that's what I'm referring to there. I try to explain that in that way.
Okay. The as we move along through this, we come to the pipe. And there are two or three in here. This is a symbolic aspect of Native American ceremonies. Is this a fairly common aspect to most of the tribes, the pipe?
No. In fact, when it's depicted in movies, you see Apaches carrying pipes, or you see other people carrying pipes that were predominantly for me, in our Plains tribes, the Lakota and Dakota people. And to see it depicted with other tribes that did not use the pipe in that manner, again, is misinformative, and it creates a whole illusion that everybody was running around with a pipe, and that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
The pipe to us is very sacred. It is a part of our history. It came to us. It was brought to us, sent directly from the Creator, the Mother, Father, Creator, by Wopé, and I mention that name as an Aniska, an interpreter of the oral tradition. I can mention it, saying that she was indeed a messenger. It was feminine energy that came and brought the pipe to the Lakota people at a time with a set of instructions for the men, women, and the elders and wise people, and giving us a way in which to live and how to use this particular instrument. And when we see it misused, or services or ceremonies or the ritual sold concerning the pipe, and the misuse and abuse by Anglo, Buddhist, Zen, we've got the Episcopal priest, we got Catholic priests running around, the Methodist church has got the playing with the pipe, and just all mm-hmm. these different things. Mm-hmm. And it just shudders my bones, because it's so improprietous, and it's very blasphemous. From their viewpoint, because their religion seen us as devils and savages, and that anything we did was indeed the work of the devil, and they shouldn't be doing that, because it's against their dogma, their doctrine, and their tenets.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yes, it is indeed.
Well, here's from page 26, here's one that I like. The Chinampa.
Chinampa.
Chinampa,
yes.
Okay, is my connection to the Creator, the sacred pipe. It's a symbol for me, and it keeps me mindful. But if the pipe isn't where I can see it or where I can think on it, the very next thing that connects me to God, to the Christ principle or the Christ concept, or however you want to say it, is when I look in the mirror.
Yes, yeah. That's kind of a grabber, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because that's an awesome sense of responsibility. If indeed we do have this need to have an outside direction, a sense of power and rightfulness and righteousness, it's very hard for us to maintain any kind of awareness. These things that we use in our ritual and ceremonies are purely symbolic in nature and are used to keep us mindful. And to take the responsibility and to say that, you know, when I look in the mirror, I see God. I see the creation of God. I see all things to which God has created and connected. And so that keeps me not only mindful, but behaving in such a way as to treat all people and all places and things as sacred. My thoughts, my words, and my deeds.
Yeah. Well, we move along to spirituality, and there are two or three short ones here on page 31, 32, 33. You really don't need to have somebody teach you how to be what you already are. You don't need somebody to show you spirituality, because you are spiritual by the essence of your birth.
Yes. We work so hard at sharing that with people every Sunday at the gathering, because people have not heard that. People have a continuance of hearing the sin, the original sin, how bad they are, how dreadful they are, and that they're going to go to some place or be cut off from or separated from God or the idea of God in some way because of their acts and deeds. And so we have this tremendous need to think that there's someone that gives us certification or validation as to our spirituality. My people believe that all things are spiritual, and as such, by our acts and deeds, we perpetuate the spirituality, and therefore we perpetuate the idea of God or the Creator or the Mother Father.
Okay. I move next to the section on women. And this is very, very provocative. We have to get into this realization that what we are talking about is changing our minds, our mindset, as to how we are related to the earth. For men, one of the biggest things that we are struggling with is that the earth is feminine. And that means we have to change our mindset of how we deal with women.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's another thing that we share, and we keep reminding the masculine energy, the men. And it goes further than that, that we're both feminine and masculine. We have both sides. But until we can get to a place of accepting that, we're still kind of talking in the infant stages of man versus woman. And when we continually treat women as we do, for whatever purposes and whatever, you know, what rationalizations we use in abusing and beating and hurting and mistreating and raping and all of the things that men do to women, we are going to have a very difficult time in coming to balance with ourselves. We need to find that relationship balance and the harmony of balance with feminine energy within our own selves first before we can recognize it as being something that is being shared with us on the outside. And that's in the relationship with the earth itself. It's very hard because we're taught as men to be dominant, to be in control, and to be, you know, very aggressive towards these things that we see that we feel and believe need to be done.
Yeah.
We're taught a lot of strange myths that don't really hold water because they're really... create paradox and against the teachings of what we believe.
Here's another one I thought was very provocative. The women already know what the pipe is about, so they don't need to fool with it in this lifetime. Did you hear me? Women already know what the Chinompa is about, and so you do not need to fool with it or use it or to have it in this lifetime. It is for men to learn the way of that pipe and to attempt to live with it in that way.
Yeah. That always creates and has created a fervor because so many women always say, you know, why aren't there any women at the pipe? Why are there not women at the pipe? Et cetera, et cetera.
So what is it about women that they don't need the pipe? What have they attained that we poor males have not?
Well, let me clarify just a second. Mostly it's white women who come into the Indian orientation and see that there is not women who are primarily dealing with the pipe. And that, of course, is not true for our gathering because we have taken some directions which have changed that in the time of change. But that women, for the historical and biological and physiological things, are in senses of purification until certain ages, up to what we call menopause. But up until that time, they're in continual cycles of purification, and as such, they're in a constant state of purification and sacredness. And it was a woman who brought us the pipe. So I try to share this in a symbolic way that feminine energy does indeed know what the lessons of the pipe are. And those lessons are how to live in a proprietous way and to take the pipe into one's life. So again, you have the inconsistency of man's behavior towards woman. Thusly, then you see that, again, the woman is teaching the man by the bringing of the pipe and saying, these instructions are for you, and this is how it is to be used. then we begin to live in such a way that our behavior then changes towards the feminine energy. But usually, because our congregation is made up of maybe 90% non-Indian people, we have a continuing struggle with that. Also, is when women come in and come up to me and say, "Why aren't any women there? You know, why aren't there any women? What's wrong with women? Are you segregating us? Are you prejudiced against us? Are you chauvinistic?" And I go, "No, not at all. Hmm. It's just that's the way it is. That's the way the pipe was brought to us. That's the way it is to work, and that's the way it will be done. As long as I have anything to say about or do with it, that I will follow those instructions, and it will be to the benefit of all the people."
Hmm. Here's another one on women. You don't write much about people who already got their, quote, stuff together. You don't have to write something about people who know who they are and where they're going and what their responsibilities are. You have to write about the dummies who don't know. And that's why everything is about men, because women know who they are and what it's about.
Yeah, when I originally said that, you should have seen the shoes, the chair shuffle. Feet were shuffling and women were kind of laughing, and things were kind of a really enjoyable moment, because it's so true in the one context, and it is true. Women do know and have a great acceptance of who they are. The things which drive women crazy, of course, is the inconsistency of the masculine energy and its inability to accept, the conditions of the relationships and the ongoing relationships, and again, men reflecting on their mothers and that whole relationship, as well as their father-son relationship, etc. We're just taught differently. And we're not taught to be human beings, but we're taught to be men and women, and therefore we have been at this gender war for so very long.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's move along the hoop now. Let's move along to fortitude. And having done some of the wisdom quotes. And in fortitude, we have ceremonies, duality, faith, healing, Indians, the Red Road, and Thanksgiving as the major subject headings. Here is one on ceremonies. We have helped create this world, and now we have to help straighten it out for those who come after us. That's the simplicity. That's what our dancing is about. That's what our sweat lodges are about. That's what our shield making is about. That's what mask making is about.
Yes, again, it is an example of our connectedness and our accountability. Rather than it being seen as the creation being outside of ourselves and us again totally disconnected and totally not having any responsibility towards what occurs and what is to occur and what should come after us, consideration for seven generations that follow us, we have a tendency to be caught up in our own self-indulgences and our own self-pity, and we have no discipline and we lack focus. And these are some of the things that I'm continually trying to say in a good way without insulting anyone.
Yeah. And let's move next to duality. And this may be a word that some people are not that familiar with. That world of duality, you have good, you have its opposite or opposing side. That holds true for everything in creation. Why would it not? Why would it be different? Is it the same for all creation? For everything that is in its positive state, it has its negative state, which exists with the same freedom and abundance as its other side. So there is no one place holier or less holy than where you sit right now.
Yeah, powerful message to help instill, if you can, in the individual their sacredness and the wisdom of their being. It is such a tremendous task to share with people who have never heard these kinds of things before, who have never had anyone say to them, "You are sacred, you are special, you have wisdom, you are a healer." endure all the things that you seek. All that you need to do is to have faith in it and to act appropriately.
And everyone, of course, has that. It's I guess this is another way of saying you are in your perfect place now, whether you think so or not.
Yes. Very much so.
Here's another one on duality. Error is part of life. If our lives were error-free, we would have nothing to do. What would be the purpose in living?
That's kind of the rhetorical question that you throw out there. When I spoke to you of our oral tradition, I talked about a time before we were flesh. And in that time, we talk about being in the state of a spirit where we were able to do all things that were imaginable, to speak and converse, to change, to change our forms, to fly, to soar, etc., in the realm of spirit, or gods, if you would. And as a result of that, we became bored, and we began to mistreat each other and to abuse each other in that perfect state. So with the creation of that error, we were then moved into the realm of human form. In other words, we became two-legged, and we lost a great deal of the power because we abused it. We were not satisfied with the idea of, quote, being in a heavenly body, and so we created chaos and eventually wound up having to do something else.
Moving on to faith. Have faith, have faith, have faith. You're on the spiritual path, you're on the road. You are the spiritual sanctuary. You are that strength, and you're not going to be punished for believing that God lives inside you. That isn't a punishment. That is a joy.
Yes.
And it's the concept, I guess, that God does reside within everyone. And some people really can't get a hold of that one, can they?
No, it's frightening because of the responsibility. Many times people have great difficulty with that I've known for some time. It's not being able to exercise the faith that in their having faith, God then does exist because they give it the energy to exist and that it's there. And we simply have to believe it's there. And from there, go forward and act accordingly as we would believe a God would act.
On healing, we have within us all things which we attribute to God. We have the capacity to remain ill or to be healed. To be healed does not mean to be well. God never said to be healed meant being well. That's an interpretation given to us by man to incite people to ferocious prayer in their own behalf. Being healed means you simply have faith, faith to face whatever it is.
Yes, acceptance of life as it comes to us. Part of our oral tradition in the acceptance of things that happen to the extent that to ponder it and to worry over it and to gnash your teeth and roll in the earth, wondering why me, why this, why that, simply to move on from that place, realizing that there is what we refer to as the great mystery. We say, tuka skenskeng, which means something holy moves. And we certainly don't know what that is. But in our faith, we are taught to accept that and to move on with life. That's the way it is. Our word with chetulo means that's kind of how it goes.
That's it.
Yeah.
When I'm sick, I'm out of harmony and out of balance. My sickness is a symptom. It is a representational symptom of my out of balanceness.
Yeah.
And of course, that's one of the concepts, I guess, that comes to the fore a lot. That balances everything in terms of the Native American way of life and their beliefs.
Well, primarily, I borrowed that in part from my relationship with Navajo people because their whole issue of being out of balance, of course, is some violation of taboo, that you've done something to fall out of balance or harmony with nature. And so it does apply to us also, and it is in our teachings that, you know, we are not thinking appropriately somehow because we are creating more of an issue than we should. And that indeed is being out of balance.
Hmm. We move along here to Indians. We have been exterminated, terminated, and every other kind of nated, and we are still in existence, but only a million of us or so. A million, that's nothing. When you think of the great melting pot of this here United States, a million people is nothing. So what effect do we have in the political arena? Absolutely none. So what do we need? We need everybody to speak to those issues that concern us so that we might somehow maintain our identity.
Yes, again talking about the political Jews and the inability of a million, less than 2 million people to have any effect upon the system whatsoever. As you know, that's less than 1% of the total population, one half of 1%. So if we did not have the empathy or the understanding of people and those issues which are very critical to us politically, socially, you know, it then shows itself as it has in the past, that we are historical relics and that people, by the very nature of not being informed as to how we are still alive and living and operating, therefore we don't come up in the political arena as being very necessary, very important. There are other more critical issues that deal with greater numbers of people. And most programs, you know, during the great 60s and 70s and 80s were all determined by numbers. The numbers of people determined the amounts of money that were spent. We just had an election out here in Los Angeles, and the new mayor there has appointed his key people on his advisory boards, his agency people, and they have Asian Americans, they have Hispanics, they have blacks, and they have 23 women. It's 46 people, half of them are women, but there are no Native Americans. And Southern California, and California is a state that contains 15% of the total Native population, and Southern California has some 80,000 American Indians in there, and yet there is no representation.
Huh. Wow. Okay, we move along to the Red Road. I look at my oral tradition, and it says the Red Road and the Black Road. The Black Road is the road of materialism, and it's easy to walk. It's easy to get into. Life in itself is easy. The Red Road is the spiritual road, and that is a road that is difficult because it's a road that says you redistribute. You redistribute your wealth. You see the sacredness of your creation and the sacredness of all things. You respect all people. You respect all things within life as you know it and life as you don't know it. The Red Road, the spiritual road, the spiritual path.
Yes. Very, very hard and very difficult. And it's symbolic in nature, if you will, because the hoop is a direction that is traveled in a clockwise direction. If you look on the front of the book, just imagine walking that outer peripheral in a clockwise direction. And it is easy to fall off and to be distracted and to be pulled away. But you can always pick yourself up and start again. Again, it is a way of behavior, a way of living, a way of treating all things to which you are connected. We've just had a tremendous incident of white supremacists and who were going to blow up a church out here, a black church, and kill a rabbi and kill Rodney King and had other people targeted. Hmm. And those people are my relatives. I'm related to them. I am connected to them. They're in my prayers. They'll be in my prayers tonight when I pray. But, you know, it's a reality that says, you know, if I do something or say something wrong, they would just as soon shoot me or blow me up as anybody else. So how can I see them as being sacred and related? It's easy for me because my oral tradition has taught me to do that.
Hmm. Okay, well, let's see. We're about halfway through the hoop at this point, just taking random quotes here for comments. Let us pause now for a quick commercial break, and we'll be pro. And we are really talking in some depth from his new book, From the Gathering, The Wisdom of Little Crow, edited by C.F. Clark. And let us move into the next part of the hoop, which is bravery. And this includes the major topic headings of change, dreams, fear, power, responsibility, sacrifice, and truth. Let's talk about dreams. Your vision quest is every morning when you open your eyes and get the guts to climb out of bed. That's your vision quest. Get out there and do what should be done. Let your dream be your vision quest and get out and live your dream.
Everybody
talks about going on a big vision quest somewhere.
Yeah,
and you're saying your vision quest is every morning when you wake up.
Too simple, isn't it?
Right.
Just too simple. People say, that's too simple. That, give us something more difficult, more spiritual. You know, isn't there anything more spiritual than just to say my dreams are my vision quest? Go out and live my dream? You know, God, you know, I should be doing 5 years of therapy or something. Don't I have to be under psychoanalysis or something in order, or do I have to have a real Indian take me out and bury me in a mountain hole? And, you know, everybody wants to do that, and I have two other books, both books of poetry, and I talk about vision questing, and so this is just my effort at saying to people, quit wasting time, get off your dead backside, turn on the switch, and get with it.
In other words, everything's within them. They don't have to go out there and starve and
time. Yeah.
Yeah. Eat locusts in the wilderness or anything. You don't have to do that.
Not at all.
Yeah. Well, let's see. We do have a question. Okay. Here is Stephen. Stephen, you're on K Talk with Little Crow. Hello, Stephen. Oh my goodness. Hi, Stephen. Was there for a while and then he left. Let's move on to fear. Alleviate the fear within yourself. Know that you are infinite. Know that you are infinity in this form, and that though you make transition, this energy will return again and again and again, because life itself is unending. Energy is unending. Let go of the fear of materialism. Let go of the fear of non-materialism. Let go of the fear of dying. Let go of the fear of living. Let go of the fear of breathing, looking, smelling, tasting, feeling. Let go of the fear and just be. Be who you are, for it is in that wisdom that you then demonstrate the wisdom of the Creator, the Mother, Father, Creator, the Mother, Father, God. Well, there's about a whole program in that saying.
Yeah, there are a whole 3 or 4 weeks, you know, because that, again, goes against so much of what people have been taught and what people have heard all of their lives. And it's so frightening in the first aspect of it. But our issue is not to frighten people, but simply say to them, this is you. This is just another way of seeing the world. It's an alternative view. It's an alternative view based on an oral tradition which teaches this to indigenous people and has taught it to us, my particular tribal group, for centuries.
Hmm. Yeah, this is the whole idea here. You've reincarnation, of course, is what is being discussed here in a word. That's you let go of fear. You just are.
Yes.
And then the concept of the Mother, Father, Creator, the idea that again you're looking at the duality of the creator force. It is a Mother, Father, Creator.
Yes, that God is just not only masculine but also feminine, and that has a lot of fear in it. Also, for people to accept an idea that God is simply not the grandfather with the long flowing beard, but is an entity of energy which contains both masculine and feminine energy.
Yep, absolutely. Well, let's see, here on the Weber Davis line is Janet. Janet, you're on K-Talk with Little Crow. Hi, Janet.
Yeah.
Hi, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello, do you have a question for Little Crow?
Well, I was just wondering what it was like to talk to him.
Well, you're talking to him right now.
Oh, hi.
Yeah, hi.
Do you have a question?
Okay. Well.
Oh, you have a friend in the background and the radio's on, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, are you enjoying the program?
Yeah.
Good. How old are you?
I'm 20.
Okay. Well, good. Do you have a question for Little Crow?
No, not really.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for listening.
Sure, Dad.
We hope that you'll continue to listen and enjoy. Let's move along to power. You are capable of doing something that's never been done before, and that is to make the world, the universe, a better place than it's been. That isn't going against the laws of nature. That's saying you have the power within you. You don't have to be a goddess to have it, or a shaman to have it, or a holy man, or a holy woman, or a medicine man, or a medicine woman. You've got it right there, just as you sit. You're it.
Yeah. You should see the look on faces. Yeah. you're it. You know, you're it. This is it. And that's who you are and what you are. You don't have to be any of these things because you already are. And just live. Just live it. Just live your life. Be unafraid. Take the challenge. Take the risk. Dare to be who you are, you know, and get out of this idea of fear and punishment and all of the things which have chained us and negated us. Again, this isn't anything that I'm using or feeling or even considering that is an act of proselytization. It is simply an alternative worldview. They're quotes from things which I've said in a gathering, in the meetings. They're totally unrehearsed. There's no script they come from. There's no written book or tenet that they come from. These all come from an oral tradition, and I simply overlay them on contemporary relevant time.
Yeah, and I think they speak volumes. They really speak volumes. You know, I have a personal feeling. Just let me try this out on you. That a lot of people who are independently spiritual without a particular religion have gotten kind of a bad rap in a sense that they. Some people will say, "Well, I am God, and you are God," and. And so it's easy to be derisive of people who say, well, I am God, so, you know, don't bug me or whatever. And that isn't truly the case. It's the idea that we each carry the spark of the creator force within us. And I think some people have misrepresented and it's been twisted out of proportion and given kind of a bad name.
Yeah, I many times find people from other religious backgrounds coming and attempting to want to learn ceremonies and rituals and things and adaptations. And I often say to them, you know, was the reason that you left your prior place, was it because you no longer believed in the religion itself, or was it the person who was presenting it to you? Did you lose faith somehow in the interpreter? Because in many cases, that's what happens. And the interpreter usually has the control mechanisms to make the congregation or the group or the denomination do or act in certain ways towards those people who do not seem to really grasp or who may be slipping or who are not truly in the fold. So it is to say to them, you know, hey, this is it. You're it. And it is misrepresented sometimes, and it's unfortunate that the interpretation does such that people are leaving organized ideas and theologies by the thousands.
Yeah.
During that time, though, change is about, and all things which have been in the structure and known as we know them will change. And as we were saying 2 years ago, rivers will change their courses, mountains will lose their faces, and we'll have snow in the California mountains in July, and we really still have snow here.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Well, let's go to Elaine. You're on K-Talk Elaine with Little Crow.
Well, I've been a student of Hatton's, and he mentioned about 55 books ago that you were writing a book called The Sacred Spirit Within, and to get on the list and be sure and get that book.
It was called The Sacred Hill Within, yeah.
The Sacred Hill,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And so I had sent my money in right then. Of course, they sent me the money back, but I've been waiting for that book. I want to know when you're going to write it.
Well, Elaine, that book is sitting on top of my file cabinet, and like so many things, I believe that that when the time is right, that it will get completed. It is completed. There are some things which I need to do, of course, in kind of getting it edited and put together. But now that I have a competent publisher and a great editor and personal friend, it is going to get done.
Okay.
And it should be out with before the end of the year.
Well, that, I'd be grateful for it. I'm waiting.
Okay, Elaine, good.
You
can look forward to that. All right, here is Brent. Brent, you're on K-Talk with Little Crow.
Yes, I'd like to ask, what part does cultural and personal progress have in your philosophy, and how do you define progress?
Personal and cultural progress. Are you talking about as a group of people, or as a are you talking
as a group of people?
In my culture, I've been able to interpret it, and as it was told to me, an individual's accomplishments and things that one accomplishes at the personal level, I won't say private, but at the personal level, are done to strengthen that individual in their ability to serve the community, what we refer to as toepspia, the people of the community. In other words, my ability to earn a living through being able to speak and to be articulate enough to do that or to write or to anything else, giving me resource thereby to help the community by which I am part of. And that's the way in which my culture has taught me to view that everything that I might receive as a result of my vision quest, through dream and vision, going on the hill, or whatever it is I'm doing, I use it in such a way that it benefits the people and not myself personally. But in doing that, because we are human, we come to fall within the hoop itself of wisdom, fortitude, bravery, and generosity, which are the attributes that we seek as Lakota people to see in people, and that is what we respect in them, and therefore we move forward with that, that everything is done for the people, not ourselves personally.
Okay, Brent, I'm sorry we have to leave it there. We're just running out of time, and I wanted to just get a quick mention in for the final position on the hoop, generosity, and the headings here, children, creation, equality, the gathering, love, prayer, transition. Here's one on children that I think is gets into some very deep metaphysical aspects of things. Children come here by choice. You were the vehicle for your child. He, she chose you. And that's as far as it goes. I mean, it's like you don't keep the cab driver at your house for the rest of your life.
Yeah. That's always a favorite of the women, you know,
yeah.
Who have terrible times with their kids. But that's what I mean. Again, it comes back a lot of metaphysical overtone there, but I do believe, and it is part of our teaching, that these things of choice and determining our own scripts happen as a result of our becoming more aware of who we are, where we come from, and how we are connected.
Yeah.
We fortunately have it in our old tradition, and it gives us a good background, a good basis for our survival here.
Mm. Okay, well, let's take one final question. Stan, if you can make it a fairly brief question, appreciate it. Stan, you're okay talking with Little Crow.
I've been hunting with Pueblo and Navajos, and I was wondering, the ritual that that they perform when there's a kill made, what does that have to do with the religion?
Well, not being a person of Pueblo or Zuni descent, I can only kind of equate it to saying that it's a respect of the spirit of the animal in which itself, and it's giving a respect to that animal and the spirit of that animal in its transition, and thanking it for the gift that it provides to the family and to the hunter itself.
Okay, we have to leave it there at that, Stan. Thanks very much for your call. We just have a minute, and I did want to end with this one, because I think that this is a terrific one to end with. Let your prayers be for everything but yourself. Pray for everyone but yourself. Now, that's an interesting concept right there.
Yes, it is, and it's one which I work on constantly with people, and I even with my own brothers and sisters who are here in the sweat lodge doing prayers for themselves, I I try to talk with him and saying, you know, that's not the original way that we learn to pray, and that's not the way our oral tradition teaches us to pray. That's an assimilated prayer form. We're meant to pray for everything but ourselves with the faith that whoever's next to us is praying for us. That puts our ego out of it and really, truly connects us to all things to which we are related.
I've heard it said by some people who have experimented with this, I guess is the word, prayer was never really very effective for him until they began to do just that, that they were praying for everyone but themselves, and then suddenly things began to happen for them.
Every time.
Little Crow, it's been a pleasure having you on Open Mind this evening, and I want to commend this book to everyone. The wisdom here is terrific. From the Gathering, The Wisdom of Little Crow, edited by C.F. Clark. You can get copies of this at a Swatha bookstore. Lita will have those in sometime this next week, probably Tuesday or Wednesday. Little Crow, best of luck to you. By the way, Contact Newspaper, this is another source for the Wisdom of Little Crow, and you can get a free issue of Contact Newspaper by calling 1-800-800-55.